You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 26 of Bras, Bitches, and Balls. I'm Nick. Our guests today are Anne Doyle and Grace Jolliffe. Lisa will no doubt have questions, although they won't be coming from her phone. still the problems with the Wi-Fi. And here's Lee.
Hi there. This is Lee at Bras, Bitches, and Balls. Hi. Okay, so we've had a lot of fun this week. Things have been going well. We've got new stores opening up. Things are going great at Busted. I'm going to go ahead and start with Betty, our model of the day, with our bra of the week. We are in a bra that,
model.
Yeah, a perpetual model. I've brought this bra in before. It's called the Matilda. It's called the Matilda, and it's by Ilomi.
You want to put her up here?
I guess that would be smart. All right, I'll move her.
So everyone can see
I just moved the. We had a little bit of a
Coke accident.
A Coke spill. Not the fun kind.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah, it's with that rock and roll. Right. It was just right. Coke all over the show.
It sounds like a 70s craziness, anyway, but it was just a spill. You think it's fine right there?
Yeah.
Okay. So Matilda.
Matilda.
She's one of my favorites.
Tell me why.
Why Matilda? Because she's pretty.
And?
Well, I don't use the J-hook very often, but she has a J-hook.
Yeah.
So, but I bet Ann and Gracie want to know what the heck a J-hook is.
Oh.
True.
A J-hook actually takes the bra and turns it into a racer back. And that hook is on there permanently. You don't have to put this crazy little piece on there. Mm. So, it looks like this.
So, this Matilda is one of the fashion colors. So, you can get the bra, I think, all the time in, like, beige, right?
They call it cappuccino, I think. But yes, it's a beige color. It's a
beige-y.
Deep,
it's a deep
dark
beige.
Yeah. And then black, and then we get fashion colors. So right now in the store, I still have some purple, not much. Red, we have some, like a blue jean color.
Do you have purple in like a 36 double D?
Yeah.
I love that purple, and I haven't gotten one yet. But
we can go check. But this one is all – I've got all the sizes in. We've sold a few, but we can still
so
get some. It's neon.
Pretty.
It is
really
absolutely
pretty.
Neon.
Such a pretty
neon
color.
Pink. It's gorgeous.
Isn't that beautiful? It's going to come out next month in white.
Meh.
But okay. It has pink dots.
That is quite the sales job, Lisa.
I'm not a white bra kind of person because I grew up with that's all you had were
that's
really
we
super
had.
Ugly yeah. white bras and maybe
but
an off-white bra.
In white.
And one of the things that Lee's mentioned before is that the thing in Europe, and now it's becoming a thing here. And actually, I talked to my Polish friend who said the same thing. She's like, yeah, my mom always wears these like really bold bras and a white shirt. And I'm like, she's like, your bras are so boring. And she's like, well, in the US, that's not an acceptable thing. But in Europe, like they wear a bra as part of the outfit that you are supposed to see. So you wear like a neon pink bra with a white shirt that's supposed to be seen, right? Or a black bra with a lot of pattern that's supposed to be seen.
Right. They dress from the inside out.
Right. Rather than just, it's a functional thing and nobody ever sees it.
So there was this movie that Scarlett Johansson did where she became like this almost like a super spy, and then she was captured and she became part of the computer dynamic and took over.
Lucy.
Oh. Lucy, that was it.
Yeah.
And in the whole thing, she had on this black crazy bra and a white t-shirt. And I've always been like, if she can do it, everybody can. And she looked badass in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you remember the movie?
I remember the trailer.
You didn't go to the end.
I don't really remember
He's like,
the
I
movie.
Didn't go to the movie, but.
But I remember the trailer existing. I'm aware of its existence.
Yes, so. I enjoyed that movie an awful lot.
Okay. I'd never heard of it.
Never mind.
Now I'm going to have to.
There we go.
I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah. So some fun things that happened this week. I found my magnetic eyelashes in the car.
The ones that didn't work.
Right. And then my husband was like, oh, I can make these work. And then we tried it. And he was like, no, these things are shite.
First of all, a two-person job to put fashion accessories on is always a no. No, thank you. No. Secondly, magnets on your freaking eyelashes. I still cannot figure out. I don't get it.
It sounds some Clive Barker type stuff, frankly. I mean, it sounds like something you get when you unlock a magic puzzle box that magnets are
like
attract.
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, no.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It still cracks me up, but that's the way it goes.
So other fun things.
Yes.
You saw Ready Player One.
I did see Ready Player One. I enjoyed it. My son walks out of it 10 years old. He's like, Matt, the book is so much better, Mom. They destroyed some of it. They took characters and made them into two people. And then they all think, okay.
That's the movies, honey. So I have not seen it, and I do want to read the book. But I did happen to see that there is a Firefly reference in it. So now I feel like I have to see it because the spaceship Serenity is in it.
There's all kinds of 80s and 90s references, which is it's fun to see a lot
of. So it's kind of like Stranger Things,
but more geeky references. But a lot of more geeky, which was really a lot of fun.
How do you get geekier than Dungeons and Dragons?
Because they're going into the virtual world, and you're really getting into this one kid's mind.
I need to find the video with the Ready Player One for girls, where it's all like references to.
If you tell me it's pink, I'm gonna punch you.
Yep.
No, it's not pink. It's like references to what's her name? Lisa Frank and things like that.
Oh, like the unicorn.
Yeah. So no, it's.
This is a good segue, though, Nick.
It's a good segue. Yes, it is. Yeah.
I appreciate that he was trying to do that. He did that on purpose.
Yeah, he did it
because exactly. We had a conversation a while back about the needlessly feminizing things that don't need to be feminized, like toothpaste or
whiskey. Right. Whiskey for girls.
Whiskey for the ladies.
Except
comes most, in a pink bottle.
Yeah. Jane Walker.
Jane Walker, who actually the most thing I like about that though, the only thing I like about that is it looks like Zatanna from the DC comics, because it's a it's a woman in a top coat and a hat and stuff. And so if you like DC comics and you like magic using superheroes,
well,
Jane Walker is the stuff.
So for you and I, you more people who actually will drink that stuff without being prompted.
you're me and my bourbon collection.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
You're much more into it. You go into her palace of bourbon, and it's really quite.
We have more bourbon than probably most liquor stores.
They have bourbon. Yeah. Okay. I've been to several liquor stores down in Louisville, Kentucky, too, and it's like, Lisa didn't have that one, but she has all the rest. But there are people who need to be coaxed into trying something delightful and delicious and out of their wheelhouse.
But are they going to try it because it's like for girls? It's still the same.
That they might try it because it's cute, but not necessarily
maybe.
For girls.
I don't know.
Just playing devil's advocate.
And like the ladies' Doritos.
I'm just saying almost everybody who's really into
Doritos.
Whiskey I know is
the ladies'
generally
Doritos
a woman,
is crap.
So.
The ladies' Dorito is absolutely insane.
So anyway, speaking of ladies, let's talk about real women who have done cool stuff rather than a Dorito chip that doesn't crunch or make Dorito dust. For those few women who
chip,
don't
though.
Lick their,
I'm with you.
Exactly. Right. For the crunch,
the chip is a vehicle for the spice.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you got, but it's got to be crunchy, or else it's just a flat.
I know, yeah.
Like you might as well just put it on a flour tortilla and just bypass Doritos entirely. Right. So, but we have Ann Doyle, whose book I read a few years ago. You did an event up at Meadowbrook.
Oh, yeah. You were there?
Yeah, I was there. So
that was a gorgeous day.
It was a beautiful day. And I don't know if the books were part of the ticket or if we bought the – you just had a
table. I think a lot of times they were part of the ticket.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a very interesting book because Anne was one of the few – women in sports broadcasting
way back.
I'll let you say the decade.
I'm not ashamed of it. I'm proud of it.
But so it's interesting
late
70s to hear. Yeah, okay.
80s.
I was gonna say 70s. I wasn't sure if it was 70s or 80s. So I
late
was
70s, early 80s. Yep.
Going over both of them. But so you have a lot of interesting stories about breaking as Nick said breaking the glass locker room door.
And I call it the steel ceiling in the auto industry. I was in there too.
Yeah. Good luck punching through
that one. We have all kinds of metaphors. Yeah, it's getting worse.
Yeah. Super. Thanks for the uplifting message.
Mine's as a gift.
Oh,
there you
don't
go.
Don't you love that?
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Anne, how did you get into sports broadcasting? Was it one of your? Was your dad in?
Yeah,
sports
my dad
or
was
in
sports broadcasting.
Oh, he was in
but can I jump back for a second
absolutely.
To the Johnny Walker or Janie Walker
oh,
thing?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
One of the things I was thinking about as you were talking about that, and that I agree with you, is that I hate the whole idea of companies making something pink, like, you know, we did the pink car with the little pink umbrella and all this kind of stuff. I hate all that. But I also, the other side of that is I hate everything is male.
Yeah.
You know, that there's this whole generic male and that we're supposed to not be offended like you guys or males or the men of the world or, you know, it's on and on and on and on. And so there is a part of me that says, you know what? Thanks for acknowledging there's an other half of the human race. And I really kind of like what they did with that Johnny Walker. I was looking at the logo. They didn't put her in a dress. I mean, she looks very much like the original icon, right?
Yeah.
And real
just
stylish, and she's got a hat on. She's strolling along with a cane. It's pretty cool. And so there is a part of me that says, hey, thanks for acknowledging that we're half of the human race out here.
And we actually drink alcohol. I was actually listening to a podcast. Not a podcast. That's a whole different thing.
Right.
One of those two.
And there's always been this idea that companies had that men would not buy anything that was associated with something female.
Right.
Yeah. But that females would be happy to buy anything that was male associated. Right.
Because it's a default, which is weird because biologically.
We only need one guy.
But also it's the
– You don't even really need the guy.
Right. And also biologically, it's the opposite. The default is female.
Wait, what do you mean by that? The default is female in
– In biology, like, you know, like the
chromosomes.
Chromosomally and things like that. Everything starts
female,
and then depending on what happens in vitro, you know, we have various variations
into male
or other chromosomal, you know, arrangements. But the default is XX.
So
at the beginning.
And the interesting thing with the liquor thing is just the podcast I was listening to is called Female Criminals. And so it was on Bonnie and Clyde, and it was on Bonnie, not Clyde. Screw Clyde. But it was talking about the fact that she was a huge drinker of whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
And he would, you know, he was abusive, but he did nice things like bring her lemons because she couldn't stand her breath smelling like alcohol. So he'd bring her lemons. He beat her. But then he'd bring her lemons, you know, to
What a prince.
Clean her breath. And so she became known for sucking on lemons, but it was to cover the whiskey breath because she really liked her whiskey.
What you can learn from podcasts. It's amazing.
Podcasts are amazing. They are.
And that's a long way from what you asked me, but it was
interesting. And it is in that you don't – like I don't want to begrudge anyone for saying, hey, like let's put a woman on the logo or anything like that. It's just like this rash of – at the same time we had seen this toothpaste, like specifically for men, I think it was like Colgate for men.
Right.
Like,
because,
we don't need
no girly toothpaste.
It tastes like trees.
It might shrink our balls to work.
This is just basically made of coal dust,
plywood. I'm a lumberjack. I'm okay. So anyway, back to where you.
Back to your story.
I'm just going to sit here and let it roll because it was good.
That's pretty much
where
how
are we
the
going
podcast
here?
Goes.
So, like your dad was a sportscaster. He was in the sporting. So you came by this like a family industry.
Kind of yes and no. I mean, for anyone who grew up in Detroit, my dad was a pretty well-known sports broadcaster during the 60s through the through the 80s, the 70s and 80s. Really, he came here in 1968. So our family moved here in 1968. So my dad was a sports broadcaster. And so I grew up with my dad on television and sports and all of that in South Bend, Indiana. And then we came here. So that was really like sports around the dining room table every night.
And so did he call games or did he just –
Well, my dad was a baseball player, you know.
Oh,
I mean, he grew
okay.
up in New York City,
so was her dad.
And he was
my
actually
my daddy was.
Was he?
He played for the Cardinals and the Dodgers. He was a catcher.
No way.
Oh my gosh.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, my dad was never made it to the major league. So he was in the minor leagues for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Daddy was in back in the 50s, it was the A, B, and C league, and he never got he actually went to the majors in training and shattered his ankle. In camp.
Okay.
So that was the end of it. But because they only made like $15 a game.
Oh, yeah. There was no money in that.
Anything.
Absolutely.
When the baseball player struck for money, he cried. It was one of the only times I can say I saw my dad openly weep. And I just looked at him. I was like, what's up? And he said, I'll never watch baseball again. They don't do it for the love of the game.
Oh, my gosh. You know, really? Like, I thought he was cheering for them to earn some money.
Well, I think it's because he made $15 a game and then was still going to college, you know, and having babies and still led a life. But he did end up watching baseball. Dad was a you couldn't really pinpoint Pop. He was kind of layered. It was like an ogre. He's got layers.
Well, I hope he was a great dad because I had a great father.
He was a great dad.
Great father. Yeah. And who really loved sports and encouraged that in all of us. But he didn't really like force us to play sports or anything. And I was one of seven children. So sports was just around the dining room table every night. But my mom, she taught speech and debate. I mean, she was a radio actress. I mean, so the whole communications piece sort of like came in the genes,
right.
I guess. And the sports piece was that I had been doing TV news for almost 10 years. And wanted to come home to Detroit. I was working out in California, wanted to come home to Detroit. And Channel 2 here basically said, you know, we'd really like to hire you. We like your stuff, but we don't have a news job right now. How about doing sports?
So this wasn't like, I'm going to get into it and change things.
No,
you were just like,
I want
to get back home and there's a job opening.
Yeah. And I sat there and went, because I'll never forget sitting in the news director's office because I knew it would be trouble.
Yeah.
I knew it would be trouble because, you know, I'm a woman who was part of that generation of women, but also was a reporter covering all the fights that women had throughout the 1970s. Okay. Every single fight. And so I had the perspective of everything that was going on, including the fact that there was this lawsuit on its way to the Supreme Court at that time against Major League Baseball because the very few women who were there and they were working for major newspapers or Sports Illustrated, they wouldn't let them in. And there was a big fight. And so I knew it would be a fight and it would be controversial. So I did it anyway because my dad said, you take that job. I mean, I really told the news director, let me think about that. Because I was visiting my parents. My dad was the president of the Detroit Sports Broadcasters Association at that time. He was the sports director at WWJ. He did Michigan football. So, I mean, my dad was, I was jumping into his sandbox, you know, in a very, could have been a very controversial way. And when I told them at dinner that night about what had happened, my dad didn't hesitate. He was surprised, but he said, you take that job. And I said to him, yeah, but this whole locker room thing, you know, and my dad said, absolutely. He said, you have got to go in those locker rooms or you'll have no credibility as a sports reporter. And he backed me every step of the way. He took a lot of pressure from other male reporters who basically they said to him, he never told me this, but other men told me later that his peers said, you have got to stop her. She is going to ruin it for all of us because what the men were afraid of was that the teams would never let women in. And what would happen is that they would end up closing the locker.
No one in.
Nobody goes in. And it was going to destroy.
So we're
going to
be fair. Nobody gets in.
Right?
Right.
Right. So it wasn't other journalists saying, yes, equal rights for journalists. No, they were saying she's going to wreck it for all of us. But my dad backed me every step of the way.
That's awesome.
And there were a lot of tests in those locker rooms.
I was going to say, did you get situations where like they would purposefully show you their bits to try to make you run screaming or whatever.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, you mastered the art of looking them right in the eye.
So I don't know if any of you are watching the did watch the TV show The Alienist. It was just on TNT.
My sister has a friend in that show.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's an actress. She has a bunch of friends. Anyway.
Which will give us a good segue into you, Gracie.
Ooh, there you go.
But so The Alienist, Dakota Fanning is one of the first women to work in the New York City Police Department for Commissioner Teddy Roosevelt. And there is serial killer on the loose who is targeting young boys who work in the prostitution industry and is like doing horrible things to the body. And they're trying to figure out why he's doing it and chasing him around and all of that. But first of all, her costumes are amazing. Giant poofy sleeve, you know, stuff that you're like, how? Of course no woman did anything because you were wearing layers of fabric and like corsets. And there's actually a shot of her with her assistant taking her corset off, and you can see like the marks in her body from the corset being so tight. But it's interesting to me because one of the things that happens to her, she walks into one of the policeman's office, like the head of the department, and he's going to the bathroom in a can and like purposefully calls her in while he's doing that to intimidate her. And he talks about some, you know, a rat or something, and she's like, "All I see is a little mouse." And she walks out, and I'm like, "You go," not Dakota Fanning, because that's not her character's name, but whatever.
You just made a really great hairstyle with headphones.
Glad I'm not on the camera today. My Come headphones just here. Started Anybody falling off. Oh no. Anyway, so we'll get back to you, Anne, but I want to bring Gracie in too, because Gracie, you are kind of on the new wave of protesting and getting involved, which involves a lot of a word that we haven't heard until recently, intersectionality, right? Mm-hmm. And you've been involved with the March for Our Lives.
Mm-hmm, I have been.
And I did not get to watch the YouTube video that Nick sent me.
I
would like to hear a little bit about what you all are doing.
Well, we had the march 2 weeks ago now. So I organized a sibling march in Keego Harbor. It's really small. It's in between like Pontiac and Waterford, basically. And so we basically just had a bunch of people. We were expecting 500. We got 1,200, which was a really big success.
Wow. Fantastic. Yeah, because I'm up in the Bloomfield area, and Keego Harbor is not a big
Oh, no, it's not. No. And we were expecting a lot of pushback because it's not necessarily the most supportive gun reform area.
Yeah.
But we actually didn't get that much at all. There was a lot of support. And so we were marching to – it was basically like a call to action to get everyone to rally together and say, like, this is the first step forward in a long, long march ahead, I guess, for legislation that's actually going to do something. And so it was youth-driven. I mean, we had a lot of adult support because I don't know how to, like, manage, like, the city or going through police departments and stuff. So we had Karen Mebrod. She's on city council. She was really great and supportive. We had a lot of students there, and we had a lot of students speaking because we felt it's important to have our voices heard because we're the ones being affected and no one's listening still. But there's also, even more so, a large, large community of people of color who have been ignored for so long. Mm-hmm. And that's another big criticism that the movement has gotten so far, is that we're not we're getting attention because
white students.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. So that was a really big part of my speech, and I wanted to make it clear that, like, this fight is not just for white students in rich, affluent neighborhoods, because I think that's gone on for far too long where, you know, privileged kids finally get attention only when they're affected.
Right.
So that's been challenging now. Yeah.
Yeah. I had been following some of the Twitter feeds, and one of the things that someone had said, African-American young man who had said, look, black communities have been dealing with this for 20 years. Like now that you have to go in with wands and be wanded down and stuff, it's a big deal, but we've been dealing with this forever. And like you said, no one's cared until it's the affluent white kids.
Right.
So it's nice to see that those youth, you and, I mean, the kids at, is it Mary Stoneman Douglas?
Marjorie Stoneman.
I knew I was going to get that wrong. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, who are doing the same and saying, look, we're getting attention, but we're going to use that platform to then turn things toward other people. And then one of the other things that I thought was pretty amusing is, you know, they went back to school with clear backpacks.
Yeah.
So the way to fix it is, here, have a clear backpack, and then we'll be able to see whether you've got a gun in there or not.
Right.
So one of the students, a man, decided that he was going to buy a bunch of tampons and fill his clear backpack with tampons. Because, again, one of the questions was, okay, if you're a young girl who's just starting that period of her life, no pun intended, you know, do you really want to wander around with your backpack clear so that everybody can see all of your personal items? So he kind of, as a form of protest, had packed his bag full of tampons, which made a bunch of people question. I guess they asked him, like, what are these? What, you know, what are they all the same? And he's like, well, I didn't realize how many different weights of tampons there were. These things are expensive, and we really need to make them available for everyone because they are super expensive. And it's like, you know,
I love male allies.
It is amazing. Well,
and if everybody just put the tampons in their backpack, then it really wouldn't matter. And, right. And maybe that is one way. Sure, if we have to use clear backpacks. Now, I want to let you know, Grace, you were so articulate on your speech.
Oh, thank
you. It was a delight to watch. Nick put it up on our Facebook pages. So I want to really tell everybody, go ahead and take 10 minutes out of your day and watch this incredible young lady get in front of 1,200 people. I didn't realize there were that many people there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, courage. You have a lot of courage.
Thank you very much.
And you really present well. So keep that going and know that you are watched and loved.
Thank you.
For that. When my son was 4, he went to Go Lightly here in Detroit. And we had to gather in the mornings before the school would open because they would only open at a certain time. And all of the children went in one entrance. That was 3- and 4-year-olds up to 7th or 8th grade. I don't really remember everybody that was in, but it was a lot. There were a lot of older kids, and some of them were as tall as I am, or more. And we had to go through a metal detector.
Well, everything on children sets off the metal detector. Their zippers, their backpacks,
their buttons, their cars, everything.
So everyone set off the metal detector, so no one got checked.
So you just ignored it. Yeah.
It became white noise.
Yeah.
It just became
it's
nothing.
Security theater is what it
right.
is.
Right. Wow. And so the guy would just be like, come on, come on, come on, come on. And the adults in the situation were very fed up, and the children were outside in the cold sometimes being dropped off by their parents who had to get to work for 15, 20, 30 minutes. And I was having to diffuse different issues. So we stopped going to school there simply because it became a real problem just to get in the door, and guns still got in.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And how long ago was that?
Well, Lively is 10 now, so 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would walk from the Park Shelton down to Go Lightly and go in there. But yeah, that was when it was like, y'all aren't using this
right.
as an actual
Like you said,
tool.
It's like security theater. Right. It's like, oh, no, we're protecting you. Well, no, we're not, because right, it's like going through the TSA.
Oh, yeah, the TSA.
Having everybody.
Never stopped.
No, and the funny thing is, the things I'm like, oh, crap, I forgot I left those fingernail clippers or whatever is the, you know, issue of the day. Mm-hmm. They get through, and then I get pulled for something like your, you know, charging cord. You know,
right.
It's like, none of it makes any sense. And I guess some people feel safer because of it. I'm not really sure who.
I don't know, but it was an absolute.
Yeah.
It was a disaster. I think the clear backpacks actually would work better in that sense, but I love the fact that one of the guys put in a bunch of tampons. I think that works. If everybody just said, you know what, we're going to put in a box of pads and tampons, then nobody.
And you know
really
what? Even if the clear backpack thing continues, then it's one thing that has changed, not what it was expected to change, which is often the way change occurs, because it becomes less embarrassing because of, you know, like the, oh, you got to hide it. You got to hide it, you know.
Well, it is a bodily function.
It happens every freaking month. Why do I have to hide it?
So again, I'll bring up when I have this pink van that says Busted Bra Shop all over it. Mm-hmm. And I drive my kid, who's a guy, to school. And one day a girl came up and was very upset. Does your mother's bra say, van say B-R-A on it?
she spelled it out.
What did he say?
He said, do you have to spell socks too? Women wear bras every day. I think you can get over it.
Yeah, he's a very cool kid. He was like, yeah, whatever. I'm like, so is it kind of embarrassing to go to school in the car? He's like, only because people like tease me about it, but they can't even spell the word bra. Like they can't say bra. They have to spell it out. And, you know, he's like, just it's underwear, people.
He got over it the first day.
Yeah.
First day, he was like, I'm done. And then he took health class and he was like, women are strong. How do you get the babies out? I was like, well,
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Eighth grade, I had to watch a video on that, which may be why I don't have children.
There you go. Yeah, we are strong. So having you two here in the studio, I just kind of want to sit back and let you talk to each other, because I think you can learn from each other in many different ways.
Well, you know, one thing I'd like to say about that is, I mean, I love seeing this next generation of, you know, social justice warriors. I love it. And, you know, on my job and the women of my generation and younger who are older than you, Grace, I mean, our job is to say go and to help you in any way we can and to have your back.
And if
there's anything we know about landmines or things like, well, don't go there, but keep going. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm here. And in my book, one of the things I did was I wrote a chapter on each of the three different generations of high achieving women in the workplace today. And, you know, and you're part of this millennial, you know, well, you're kind of almost Gen Z. Like, how old are you?
I'm 17.
You're Gen Z.
Yeah.
And see here, Gen Z, this next generation, I mean, wow, I see the millennials and Gen Zs taking the lead now.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have good role models for sure.
Yeah. We just need to come up with a more fun
Keep
name.
Fighting.
Than Gen Z.
I like Gen Z.
Fireball's kind of cool.
Isn't that a TV show? Yeah, it's a cartoon. Absolutely. I have so many cartoons. So there's something that started. There was a conversation that started in the hallway before we came in. I said, "Oh, let's talk about that on the podcast about the DAC Beavers."
Oh yes, and you're a DAC member, right? And that's Detroit Athletic Club. For anyone who does not know,
we've been there for a long time. It's a very interesting place to be. It's a great place to be.
It is. It's evolved.
And the Beavers are basically a water polo team that is – men are in the – there's now an otter team, which is the ladies. But
is that right?
Yeah, that's new.
Okay.
And they keep asking me to get in the pool, and I'm like, I'm not as good shape as you are.
So in the DAC world, Beavers are male and otters are female.
Yep. Mm-hmm, okay. That's it.
I follow otters
on Twitter.
And it's
a club. So,
cool.
So it's this private club, the DAC, for anyone who doesn't know. Very prestigious business club in Detroit.
It's invented. It's got a lot of Detroit history.
Oh, yeah. Very, very, very prestigious club. But for many, 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 many years from the beginning, no women were allowed to be members. And, of course, a woman who was even going there for a social event with her husband or as a guest had to go in the side door. And so this history went on and on and on, even in terms of when I was covering sports, that was still the case. And so I was invited
to go down. So late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, I don't think it changed. Okay. Do you know when it changed?
Because in the
80s. It did. Maybe 90s in terms of when they first allowed women. I know that it was because they were running into financial trouble that they finally decided they needed to invite women. It wasn't about discrimination. It was about
like, we can get more revenue.
Yeah, we can get more members. And now they're very.
Hey, whatever works.
Right. Whatever works. Well, one of the stories that I know about women and the side door and the front door. And now everyone has to go through the side door.
Right.
The front door
got beautiful now.
It is beautiful, absolutely. There was an assistant mayor, deputy mayor, and his last name was Green. And he was there for a long time. I'm friends with his son, Trey. Trey and Colleen Green from Boston Edison.
Yeah. Oh, I love
so,
Trey.
Yeah. Will you check that? Because I think something freaked out.
Okay.
So Trey and Colleen, Trey's mom, was a fireball. I mean, she was pistol. And she walked up to the front door one day. She needed to get in. I don't know the circumstance. But basically, the doorman said, Mrs. Green, you're going to have to go to the side door. And she was like, I'm going through you. And if you want an incident and you want to stop me, come on. And she's this tiny little lady, very compact. And he let her in. And that was it. That was it. She said, you are going to let me through this door. You are not sending me to the side.
Yeah, there were a number of those moments that occurred over the years. And there was also a moment, which was in the late 70s, where they dumped a whole bunch of high heels. You know, they had a pickup truck, and they drove it up to the front of the DAC. These were women who were part of the National Organization for Women, local women. And they dumped these shoes right on the steps and basically said, you know, the only heels at the DAC are inside or something
like
that.
Or the members.
You know? Yeah, it was a media event. But it took a long, long time of fighting. But lots of fighting still to do, right, Grace?
Mm-hmm.
Twice.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting and also very disheartening to see the pushback that female leaders in the March for Our Lives movement get now. Like with Emma Gonzalez, I sometimes go down this rabbit hole of reading terrible Facebook mm-hmm. comments, which you should never, ever do.
Right.
And,
about her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they just attack every part of her identity and just degrade her in so many ways. And it's disgusting because they feel threatened. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's disheartening to see that from them, but also even more encouraging to know that it's not stopping her and it's not stopping anybody else. You know, we've been seeing and experiencing that for so long that we know not to let it, you know, bog us down or anything. Just keep pushing past it.
And that's
it.
Great.
Yeah.
That you've moved past that because mm-hmm. I think it really did slow down a lot of women of my generation because there were so few and there was so much social pressure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of that, too, I think, is there was so much, like when you started, it was pretty much there were the men who controlled everything, and then everything else was shut out, right? Not just women, but lesbian, bi, gay, you know, all of the, obviously, people of color. So everyone kind of had their own thing that they were dealing with, and it was so segmented. Mm-hmm. And now it's like you look at it and you see these youth are, they're all rallying around one thing, like not wanting to die while they're in school. But
coming together.
But not only that, but it's all of them together. It's not just one segment. And you can look at someone like Ms. Gonzalez, and yeah, there are people who are like, why does she have a shaved head? Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, because her version of beauty is not what your version of beauty is, and maybe she just doesn't care about what you think, you know?
And it's hot.
Right. Yeah. But it's like she looks like a freaking like somebody that should be on one of those movies, like an actual Tomb Raider, not like the
Lara looks like a model.
Of, yeah.
To me, she looks like she's absolutely gorgeous.
But you look at the people, and I don't mean visually look, but you look at the groups of people there, and you have leaders who are gay, who are trans, who are white, but are also of color, and they're all together in the same room. And not to say that wasn't happening in kind of the first wave, but I think it was much harder because everything was so oppressive everywhere.
Well, and you know, there's the old saying, divide and conquer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I was listening, coming down here to some of the speech, Martin Luther King Jr.'s, you know, speech. You know, today's the 50th anniversary. We're recording on the 50th anniversary, you know, of his death. And one of the things he was saying in that speech was, you know, we need to remain united. And that the way that he was going back to Israel and Egypt and the way the pharaohs used to mm-hmm. keep people in slavery was by getting the slaves to be fighting amongst each other. Mm-hmm. And he said, once things change, when people came together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is like how you'll often have a power structure and how very threatened and fragile it is revealed to be when those that the power structure is oppressing and saying we're better than you, as soon as there is the smallest amount of pushback, that dominant group, it reveals itself to be very fragile and very mm-hmm. threatened and very scared mm-hmm. of all of the other groups that it has been lording it over, essentially.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use this opportunity to put a plug in for a podcast for another group of people that often get overlooked and ignored. That is the Indigenous community.
Oh,
There is a podcast out there called Missing and Murdered. And this is the second season. Mm-hmm. The first season was about the Highway of Tears, which is a highway that runs most of Canada where a lot of women end up disappearing.
Right.
This season, though, is about, it's called Finding Cleo, Missing and Murdered, Finding Cleo. And Cleo was a Cree woman who, along with her five siblings, were all removed from her mother's care and from the Indigenous community in Saskatchewan that they were from. And the family that is remaining, her mother has since died, never had contact with them again. They were all adopted out, possibly without the mother understanding that she was giving up her rights to her children. But her mother had been in residential schools, and of course I knew the residential school history. But in the 60s, there was what was called the 60s scoop, where in the 1960s, Indigenous children were being taken away from families and adopted out to white families in the U.S. and Canada. So Cleo ended up in the U.S., adopted in the U.S., but the family had one story about her that they had heard. And so the podcast, which is by Connie Walker, and I can't, Jennifer Fowler is her producer, but Connie is a Cree woman and reporter, and she's done both the first season and the second season. But it is an amazing podcast. Mm. And if you want to have some light shed on a community that is often silenced and doesn't get a voice, and often the government is actively acting against their interests, I would highly recommend at least the second season of Missing and Murdered.
Great.
I'm going to start crying while I talk about it.
So I want to know what's next.
Okay. Well, we are planning town halls for April 7th. So there are a series of town halls that are being planned probably in any location near you. So if they're not up yet, they're in the process of coming into fruition. So Congress members are on recess for like the next couple weeks. So they're going to be home. And now is the perfect opportunity for everyone to contact them, let them know that their constituents are wanting to be heard. And if they won't, then you need to contact whoever is running against them. Because we need to talk to them now. And if they're not going to listen, we're going to find someone who will.
And you're voting next. You're able to vote next year on your next birthday.
Well, I'm born in December. So I'm going to
vote. But on your next birthday.
Yeah.
So you missed the midterms. But
yeah. No, for the big one.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll be there.
So April 7th is this Saturday.
Yes.
Right? It's my niece's birthday, too. Happy birthday, Regan.
I'm like, how do you know that?
So, yeah. I was counting, too. But So those town halls, is there a way, like, is there a March for Our Lives website or something where you can look, like, in your community? Do you know? Or is it just kind of, like, check with your local?
There is a page called Town Hall for Our Lives. It's kind of like a branch off of the main website.
Okay.
So if you Google that, it's something will most likely pop up. There's also the Women's March organization has this really cool site called actionnetwork.com. So if you look up marchforourlives.actionnetwork, they will connect you with this really great site where you can just type in your zip code and it will show you all the organizations and possible town halls in your area.
Okay, so Google Town Hall for Our Lives.
Yes.
Or go through the actionnetwork.com.
Yes, yeah.
And find your local town hall by zip code.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And if it's not happening on April 7th, it will be some short time after that.
The other thing I really love about what's going on is that women have started running for office in droves.
Yes, ma'am.
And
yes, ma'am.
That is fantastic because there are so few women in state and federal politics that often our voices and things specific to women get kind of steamrolled because there isn't anyone there talking about what it is that we need or our perspectives on things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, you know, one thing I want to add about that is that, you know, my book came out 5 years ago, but we just have gone through all the research again to update the book, and all the numbers are worse. And people don't realize this, but one example related to women running for office is there's something called a Global Gender Equity Report, which is put out every year, and it ranks 144 developed countries in the world based on equality between men and women. And the United States has dropped now to 43rd position in the world, and in terms of women in political power, we're 78th. Mm-hmm. Wow. And, you know, people, Americans don't realize that. You know, we like to think we're so far ahead. We are not.
No, in the countries that are ahead of us, you're like, okay, seriously, you guys can like poo-poo other countries because you think that they are less developed and they may be in certain ways. But a lot of it is that you've never actually left here and seen the rest of the world. And yeah. if you look at
other
it,
than
I mean,
TV.
Right. You like countries that you would never think have had a female leader have had women in leadership. And we're like.
Right.
No, sorry.
Yeah, not
yeah,
her.
And we're like, she might, a woman
she might
press
the button.
She's on her period.
Yeah.
We'll take anybody but her.
Right. Like, yeah. okay. Yeah.
We can go on and on, right? yeah. But the great news is that women are running. Last number I saw was over 30,000 women had contacted Emily's List now about
yes.
running for office.
Yeah.
And that's gigantic increase. And so I've been waiting decades for this moment mm-hmm. of awakening.
Well,
and
you look at these 15, 16, and 17-year-olds like Gracie.
Yeah.
or Emma Gonzalez, who everybody – I don't know that she has any political aspirations whatsoever, but everyone's like, girl, you got to run for office, you know?
Yeah.
And you're all getting your training right now. Like, you're getting the political experience and the training. And,
the
yeah, you've got people behind you, but you've got the leadership experience. You're learning how to deal with bureaucracy
yeah.
and all of those kinds of things. And I think it really is going to – that's going to propel more women, too. I think the biggest issue – I mean, personally, from my perspective, is like I don't want to play the games of getting elected. You know, I don't want to have to bash somebody else in order to get.
Right.
We have to get over that.
You know,
yeah.
but I just don't want
to.
Like, it's
that.
Not that I feel not nice about it. Like, I don't care about being nice. It's just not something that I don't want to deal with those kinds of. I don't
but that's
deal with that
where
kind
power
of negativity.
Is. But that's where power is, and that's what I like to say. You got to do it.
You've found your power. Her power's through words. She's a contract reader. She knows how to help small businesses find their fire and find their power and know how to get into different contracts. She's really, really great at that. We know we've got to figure out what we can do individually to help our, to be productive part of our society, right? I think Lisa has found a lot of, I mean, you can do more, but she's so good at taking words and finding the power in them mm-hmm. where people like me need her.
Yeah.
I need her in a big way. And I like to promote her to other people like me who are like, we're every day we have so much to do. Our brains get so we know what we're good at, right? And we need people like her there. Mm-hmm. And so people who are going into office, you're great on the microphone. You're incredibly intelligent. You're going to need someone like her if you ever do decide to go into politics that can read the words for you, that has the time and the bandwidth to go through every word and every paragraph to make sure nobody's putting in something that you don't intend to sign.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I think when you talked about we're so busy and everything, the other issue is just from the perspective, not at the perspective of running, but like, what do you support? I think a lot of us get so tied up in trying to make a living and the 16 other things that we got to do, and I got to let the dogs out and for you, you know, figure out
she
kid
has
situation,
four, so that's
logistics.
Actually huge.
Yeah.
Dogs.
It's like having one child. I don't know.
I have dogs.
I don't have to run them.
I understand.
I don't have to run them to soccer practice or anything. So there's that. But when you start doing all of that and then you care about, I care about this, but I also care about that. And you kind of get paralyzed with not knowing where to put your energy, so you just watch Netflix.
Well, one of the things we know from research is one of the most important things that women can do is to run for office because that's where the political power is, and mm-hmm. also because women in office or political leaders are very visible. And so people need to see visible examples mm-hmm. of women with power.
Absolutely. When I was in undergrad, my original major was international studies. I went to Michigan State. And with international studies, you majored in four different cognates. So I had like economics, political science, French, and English. And I ended up changing my major mainly because I didn't want to go to grad school and have to go on the East Coast. And coming from poverty, which is another situation, you can't go take a free internship and pay for rent in Washington, D.C. You have to have come from privilege to be able to do that. So unless there's something, you know, some sort of organization that says, hey, we'll provide free housing for you if you, you know, if your family was on welfare growing up, then you're all it's all a bunch of rich kids going and getting the internships. And so I ended up going and becoming a high school teacher for a while before going to law school. But one of my role models, the person I wanted to be, was Madeleine Albright. I was like, I love her.
Yeah.
Right.
I still powerful, love her. Made a but, powerful impression on you.
It's like the first female
you,
Secretary
right?
of State. You know, and I'm now still reading a book I mentioned, I think, last week on a woman who was on the Council of Economic Advisors, but her dad was one of the Manhattan Project, the Hungarians on the Manhattan Project. The book is called The Martian's Daughter because the Hungarians who were on the project were all called Martians because nobody understood them and everything. It was like eight Hungarians. And it was John von Neumann, Moyman's daughter. So and she was a professor at U of M for a while and another glass ceiling breaker. Like she was just like. It was in the 50s, and she's like, I'm not just getting my PhD and then having kids. I'm having kids, and I'm going to work, you know? And so it's – but you have to have those role models or you don't even think it's possible.
Right. And we still have too few. I mean, I get discouraged when I look at the numbers and how the incremental change that has occurred in my working lifetime, which is almost five decades now. I mean, it's really been incremental. It's pathetic. And Grace, come on, let's go.
I know. We're ready. We're going to go.
Go faster.
Yeah.
We'll come with you.
And I do think that the kids coming up now are going to see what political power is and run for office more. But like you said, there are so many right now that are women that are running that it's a very exciting time. And actually I have a girlfriend who, you know, Rachel.
I know. Yes, I know several of them.
blonde Rachel. Tall.
Yes.
So she is very supportive of female candidates. So I just recently got an email from her that I have to go through and she's got about six or seven women who are running that she's like, support these women. And so I'm going to go look at their websites and their platforms and try to write checks wherever I can, because the other part that's difficult for a lot of people to swallow, particularly women, is the fundraising part of it. You know, it takes a lot of money to run for office.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah, my mother-in-law was a city council member for over two decades in North Carolina. We watched her run for state senate, and it was expensive, but she was a fighter. She did great work for them. So we only have a few minutes left, and there's a couple things that I do want to touch on. I want to thank you guys for coming and taking your time, because I know it's valuable. And today is the anniversary of Dr. King's death, which was a very important – that's a pivotal moment for many of us. I was born shortly after that happened, and so I was brought up in a time when race and sexuality – was in turmoil. I always felt like I was in a little bit of a tornado, and I didn't understand why that was happening. But yesterday was also the anniversary of the first showing of 2001, The Space Odyssey. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yes. So that's also a time when science fiction came into the forefront. Science fiction, the movie genre.
Yeah.
Really, that was our masterpiece.
Right.
And was 2001 A Space Odyssey. And we had to look at human beings and that we've got to get out of this infancy stage.
Right.
So I always have felt like that tied in with changing our mindset.
You've got
to change your mindset.
It's that thing about representation matters. Representation matters both of reality and also of possibility too, because when people are presented with ideas – of what is possible, as well as what already exists but has been ignored. I think that's actually, that's a very good point. And 2001 started that, and then further other things which showed where we could possibly be. you know, the original version of Star Trek, which, you know, you look at it now and you go like, oh, that's quaint and lovely. But actually was fairly controversial.
It was very controversial. You had interracial kissing.
Which they actually messed up every take where the studio wanted them to avoid that. And they messed up every take, so the only take they could use was one of the ones where it occurred, where the horrifying thing to the studio occurred, so they could only use those takes. And they did that a lot, actually, not just with that, but anytime they had something controversial, they would do that.
So sometimes you just really have to reach out and love Shatner. you do. I like his new show, but we won't go there.
He has a new show?
Well, yeah, he and the Fonz go out, and Terry Bradshaw and George Foreman go out into the world and travel. Have you not seen this show?
No. I feel like this is an April Fool's joke.
It is not an April Fool's joke. It's
like
totally
someone
real.
Just got a GoPro from their grandkids and they just
they go out and travel the world and do different crazy things. Oh, you've got to. I'll show it to you. I think we don't have to like Shatner.
We can like Gene Roddenberry.
More guys behaving badly.
Right. Yeah,
they behave like granddaddies out there that anyway, it's kind of fun.
I love Terry Bradshaw though. So, other things going on. Karen Dibas, who was our guest a couple weeks ago, her book is now out, Secret Detroit.
It is. I saw it at Pages.
Mm. Yes, and I believe she has an event coming up at Pages, but I don't remember the date. So, Karen, if you're listening, let us know and we'll tweet it out.
We'll put it out there. Now, Anne, where do we find Power Up? Is it at the local bookstores?
Yes, I think it is. But we just have a third edition that just came out, actually. It's all updated, but it's definitely on Amazon. There's an audio book. I mean, you can get it at Audacity, any of those places, or you can get it from my website, and I'll personally sign them for you if you get them through me. But it's available, just easy. My website is andoilestrategies.com, and I'm working on doing my own podcast pretty soon, so maybe I'll have you on.
Yay!
Not ready yet, but we're working on it. Yay!
That's great. And I'm interested in reading the updated version because, yeah, like I said, it was a few years ago.
The research is worse. Okay. It's all worse.
Super.
Not making progress.
Spoiler alert. So other things going on. The Star Wars, we talked about costuming in both Black Panther and A Wrinkle in Time. Did you see A Wrinkle in Time?
I haven't seen
yet?
A Wrinkle in Time yet.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Gotta see that.
The Lively wants to finish the book first, and I'm gonna respect that.
Costumes are amazing. Everything is just beautiful. And I liked Black Panther, but I'm not like the comic book genre is like okay, interesting to me, but A Wrinkle in Time was one of my favorite books growing up. And so to see that and to see the CGI and the costumes, it's gorgeous. It's just a gorgeous movie. So Star Wars at the DIA, they have a costume exhibit that starts May 30th, I think.
Ooh,
so I think you can get tickets now and you might want to.
I know. Are you sure it's not already out? Because it's got all the banners out front already.
Oh,
you can buy tickets
Believe
now.
Believe me, I have inside. It's not yet.
But you might want to buy tickets now if you're a big Star Wars fan, because I suspect that it may be difficult to get tickets. So the tickets are now on sale, but I believe May 30th is the start of the exhibit. Yeah.
Well, unlike Lisa, I loved comic books and got my very first subscription to Spider-Man in 1974. My sister got that for me for my birthday. And those comic books all got stolen. But
maybe were something new. Yeah.
So I loved the Black Panther. I had a wonderful time there. We want to go back and watch it more and more. But I've also started a new show called Jessica Jones on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
I've heard of that.
My son got me watching that
one. There you go.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, it is also superpower. Toxic masculinity.
You can see that everywhere, Nick.
Yes. But it's a great illustration.
Masculinity ruins the party again.
Every game. Yeah. Yes, it does. So that wraps up another episode of Bras, Bitches, and Balls, also called B3. And
I have one more thing before we completely wrap up. Blair Braverman, my sled dog, Musher Twitter obsession. She will come speak to anywhere, and if it's within driving distance, may bring a sled dog. So we have to figure out how and why we need to get Blair Braverman and one of her sled dogs or two to Detroit to do a speaking engagement.
Well, there's snow coming Thursday. Maybe you can make it quick.
Yeah. Well, there was it was started snowing today. She's like, we got to do it. Anyway, so
next year.
So Frozen. Frozen Twitter, we got to do it. Well, and I think off season we'll have a better chance of getting her because they're not doing running sled dog thingies. Anyway, so okay, that was all on my list.
Oh, the beer.
Oh, the beer.
I don't remember now. I can't. Oh, okay. Darn it.
We need to write that down before
we gotta
come
write
in.
It down. Yeah. All right. So, Busted Bra Shop, new spring colors. Come see it. Try it on. Your boobs are important. Women are important. We started this. I started this business because women are important.
All right.
53% of the population in Detroit in the last census was female, which means there's more boobs than people. There was not a place to buy a bra. I thought it was the dumbest thing in the whole world.
In the city of Detroit? In the
whole you had to drive 30, 45 minutes each way to go buy a bra, something we wear every day.
Wow.
We should also shout out to Bev Burns.
We should shout out to Bev Burns.
Bev Burns, who probably doesn't listen to this, but she was an attorney when at Miller Canfield when I used to be an attorney there. And she
was a journalist.
Yeah, she was a journalist before she became an attorney. She was an investigative journalist. And anyway.
Don't say the name of the company.
She got a specific company that was not going to come to the city to – she wrote them a letter and said, look, I don't want to drive 40 minutes out to Somerset to get
this product.
I want to buy it here. And they went in and talked to Lee right after that.
Well, there was a particular company. I asked for their products. They sent me an email that said, due to the economic situation in the city of Detroit, you are not allowed to sell our products.
This was right after the bankruptcy. Yeah.
This was right after the bankruptcy. And this was when I was first starting. So when Bev came in, she said, why don't you have this product? And I said, this is why. And I showed her the email and she got pissed.
Yeah.
And she wrote the president of the company and said, this is racism. This is what you were doing is shutting out a female business owner from products that she could make money on. And why would you do that when you started in a very similar way 40 years ago?
And that's the power of words.
Yeah.
And they called me, they were like, women and the power of allies.
Yes.
Women supporting women. And she still shops with me. She's a lovely lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With male allies, who we appreciate.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick.
Okay, great.
Thanks, thank Bruce.
You. Okay, so lovely. Who do we have next week?
Oh, next week we have our friend Melanie from Earthwood Studios, who is going to come talk to us about her artwork, which is it's cute horror.
Ooh, great.
It is adorable. And also there is a some sort of horror event that the name is going to escape me.
Motor City Nightmares?
Motor City Nightmares? Yes. Coming up at the end of April. So she's going to be involved in that. So she's
My friend Dan founded that.
Yeah. So Melanie will be here next week. And she has fun things like cats that look like Pennywise the Clown from it and that kind of it, really cute. So earthenwoodstudios.com. Check out her stuff. It's very cute.
And if you'll take the vomit spots and pull us out of here. Before we go into a second hour, that would be
absolutely get us out of this hole.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Ellen.
Bye, everybody. This was a lot of fun.
Stay bitchy.
It was great, yeah.
Stay bitchy.
Bye.